ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, New Orleans. Two armed robbers attempted to rob Sam's Meat Market in the 8400 block of South Interstate 10 Service Road just before 8 p.m. Tuesday, December 4th, when a worker in the store armed with a gun confronted them. The employee shot at both suspects, with one, a juvenile, taken to the hospital, where he was later declared DRT, or dead right there. The second suspect, an 18-year-old, was arrested by officers at the hospital. According to the manager, they came in and were saying, "Money, money, money, money. That's all they said," the manager informed police. The worker can be seen in surveillance footage complying with the would-be robbers at gunpoint before reaching for a gun when they became distracted and opening fire on both suspects. The employee is not facing any charges. This has been the DGU, or Defensive Gun Use, files.
The story you have just heard was true.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America armed and free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free, and stand by, we'll be with our guest in just a moment. Thank you for your patience. Jenna Ellis is with us, and this is a fascinating case that was just heard in the Supreme Court last week. And Ms. Ellis is with the American Family Association, and they have nearly 2 million constituents worldwide. Jenna, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, and this was a very important case.
It really, really was, and I want to get right into it. The case is United States versus Scrimeti, and tell us a little bit about it. What are the meets and bounds of it?
Yeah, so this started out as Tennessee Senate Bill 1, which was passed, that basically was just the state protecting children from genital mutilation and chemical castrations. And so this has everything to do with the trans agenda. And Tennessee, through their duly appointed legislative representative, simply said, we are going to prohibit gender reassignment, quote unquote, chemical alterations for children specifically. And so, of course, the Biden administration and the ACLU challenged that. It made its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which accepted a hearing of this case and whether or not Tennessee, as the state, has the power to prohibit gender-altering surgeries for minors. And the answer to that is that, of course, the state can protect children from this type of, frankly, child abuse.
Yeah. Your organization, the American Family Association, has an amicus brief on the case. What is AFA's interest in the case?
Yeah, so we were joined by lawmakers from 23 states which have or are considering similar laws on the books. And so the interest, of course, is protecting children and ensuring that the state can step in where there is clear child abuse going on and to ensure that minors are protected. And so it was very amazing, actually, that lawmakers from 23 states joined our amicus brief in support of Tennessee's law.
Interesting. Folks, if you just tuned in, you're listening to America Armed and Free. We're not doing the gun topic right now because, frankly, this is more important right at the moment. And we're speaking with Jenna Ellis, who is the senior advisor of public policy for the American Family Association. So, and just to fill in and reset a little bit. But why do some folks seem to, why is it that they're, their sacrament seems to be castration and mastectomy?
Yeah, this is all about the left's push for a completely godless society. And so if we take a step back from the understanding that our rights are God-given, that human beings are created in his image and have inherent dignity and worth, and so our rights come from God, our creator. I think you played a really profound quotation from former President Ronald Reagan, who rightly said that that our rights are not provided by the Constitution. It actually doesn't matter. If we repealed the Second Amendment tomorrow, we the people would still have the right to self-defense. We would have the right to keep
their arms
because it's not up to the government to determine our rights and transform them into mere privileges, which they can alter or abridge at whim. It's up to the government to preserve and protect what God himself has already given to the individual. And for the left, it's been an encroachment not just on self-defense, not just about the right to speak freely, not just about free exercise of religion, but all of these things have one common denominator, which is that they want to transform our society into a godless populist state.
Right.
And they're doing that through the LGBT agenda, by putting up so-called experts, these doctors who say, well, if a child even thinks that they might be a different gender, then we, the experts, can tell the parents that you have to affirm that in the child. Otherwise, your parental rights may be foreclosed, which those are God-given. We know that the Bible says that children are given to parents to safeguard their well-being, to train them up in the way they should go. As Proverbs says, then when they're older, they won't depart from it.
Right.
But the left is purposefully trying to tear down what it even means to be a human, what it means to be a parent, what it means to even have rights. And so this is just the next iteration of this false ideology that specifically for the sexual revolution started in the 1950s and 60s, when we decoupled what it meant to be have a marriage between one man and one woman, and said, well, marriage can be between anybody.
Right.
And so then having a child can be, you know, between anybody. And if you don't want to have a child, then you have so-called abortion rights. And then we went to same-sex marriage. And then now this is, again, just the next iteration to say, well, what does it even mean to have gender that is immutable, that is God-given? We don't think that that's a right that is God-given. That's not part of our human dignity. So we're going to just say that you can create your gender, whatever it is. And if the so-called experts want to provide this hormone therapy or genital mutilation surgery, then that is a so-called right that a child has.
Right.
And that's something that the state can't prohibit. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, there was a song in the 60s called Lola, with a tagline, boys can be girls and girls can be boys. It's a mixed up, jumbled up, shook up world except for Lola, about a transgender date. And it just, you know, it turns reality on its head. And before you get to the right to keep and bear arms, how about the right to keep and bear genitals?
Right. And, and the right to the understanding that's based in reality and discoverable, discernible, observable reality, as C.S. Lewis writes in Mere Christianity, that, you know, our gender isn't assigned. It's
respectfully
observed.
Respectfully, we have a sitting Supreme Court justice who cannot make that distinction publicly.
Well, and isn't that fascinating that the very same justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who said in her confirmation hearing, I can't say what a woman is because I'm not a biologist, now thinks she's competent to sit in adjudication of a case that's all about sex discrimination.
Without being crude.
Can she recuse herself?
Without being crude, I wish one of the senators had said, look between your legs, hon.
Well, but I really wish that some of the other justices of on the Supreme Court during these arguments last Wednesday would have asked very pointed questions to say, you know, listen, gender isn't a sign. Do you think that it's just arbitrary that a doctor says, well, you know, congratulations, mother and father, you have, well, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see until they're 12 or 18 or maybe even only 6, and they tell us what gender they are. No, a doctor observes. Based on the science, they can even do a chromosome test now at as few as, you know, 8 to 10 weeks because our biology is so inherent to who
right.
we are. And they can determine without even observing the genitals yet what sex a child is.
Jenna,
that's immutable.
I have a question for you. In these gender so-called reassignment surgeries, what is the surgical procedure for changing the chromosomes?
There is no ability to change the chromosomes, right? And so this is just, I mean, if you want to chop off your genitals as a male or as a female, that doesn't change your biology and it doesn't actually change your gender because your chromosomes will still be the same. And it was interesting. I mean, I was at urgent care here in Florida a couple of months ago, and it was fascinating to me that they asked the gender you identify with and the gender you were assigned at birth. And if it didn't matter what gender you were assigned, quote unquote, at birth, why would they even ask that question? But they know that it matters to the diagnosis, to the treatment, and to the outcome of the patient to know actually what you are in terms of your sex. And so it's all of this language manipulation. But one of the biggest problems, even if the Supreme Court ultimately rules in favor of the Tennessee law, which they should, it is a really big problem that the Chief Justice and even Justice Barrett, who are supposedly on the conservative wing of the court, were participating in the leftist language manipulation by using terms like gender-affirming care. They were even calling the ACLU lawyer, who is a woman but presented as a man, they called her Mr. That's buying into and advancing the lie of the left.
Yeah. You know, you bring up an interesting thing is because one of my statements is he who frames the argument usually wins a debate. And you have on a couple occasions during this conversation referred to it as malfeasance. But why don't we refer to folks who identify as transgender as gender dysphoria, as a gender dysphorics, or in the case of the transition surgery, gender dysphoria malfeasance?
Right. And this is where, though, they have transformed the actual terminology for this to
mm-hmm.
say, okay, if you are confused as to what your gender is, there isn't an issue with your body. There's an issue with how you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so emotions simply reveal what we're thinking about truth. It doesn't reveal the truth. And so if we then think aligned with truth, then our emotions will line up with reality. But where the left is going and what so many of these psychologists and therapists are telling young people, whether it's in the LGBTQ space or even just, you know, within traditional relationships or anything, it's go with your emotions. However you feel, that is your truth.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, okay, what is the truth? Think truthfully and then your emotions will line up.
Well, my dad always said you got a reason from cause to effect. And when you allow emotion to override causation, there can't be a true result from that. But as Morris Albert once said, feelings. All right, stand by with Jenna Ellis from the American Family Association. We'll be back after this on America Armed and Free.
This is Herman Cain, and if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells,
is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed
very were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the swap shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
Hi, Mark Levin here. America Armed and Free. Sounds like a good title for a book. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
Boys are boys from the beginning. Girls are girls right from the start. Only girls can be the mummies. Only boys can grow up and be the daddy. I think you're a special person. And I like your ins and outsides. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine.
And welcome back to America Armed and Free. We're not on the gun topic right now. We are talking about something that temporarily has precedence, and that is the recent case called United States versus Smickmert. Scamerti, and we're talking with the representative from the Jenna Ellis from the American Family Association. You know, it seems to me, Jenna, that a generation ago, Mr. Rogers knew the answer. Did they not listen to Mr. Rogers?
Well, Mr. Rogers clearly should be canceled. He's a total homophobic trans bigot, right? So that's what they would say about Mr. Rogers, when clearly he was just simply educating children on the truth. And this was fact just a few years ago. But we've gone from gay marriage, homosexual marriage, that, you know, love is love. You can love whoever you want. And as long as you're an adult, this doesn't harm anyone, to fast forward 10 years later, we now are actively harming children through medical altering surgeries.
Right.
When truly children have the basic inherent dignity and the right to intact bodies, to not have these decisions be made for them.
Well, you know, gender dysphoria is not new. American thought leaders had on an Irish psychiatrist. I'm trying to think of her name, and it doesn't come to me. It doesn't pop to my head right now. Very Irish-sounding name, of course. But she was a tomboy and absolutely wanted to be a boy throughout all of adolescence. And had she come up with that ideology today, they'd have lopped her breasts off and given her cross-sex hormones and done a surgery that ends with plasty and turned her around to look like a boy. And I don't think she'd have been any happier. She's a very happy mom with two children right now, which would not have happened if they'd have done all those things to her. So, I mean, it's not new. The question is, how do you deal with it?
Right. And Matt Walsh, whose study through the Daily Wire, I need to give them credit because it was really a lot of his investigation through the Daily Wire that uncovered what was going on at Vanderbilt and some other places that led to the Tennessee law prohibiting these types of horrible mutilation surgeries. And he made the point that children go through adolescence. They go through discovering and learning about their bodies and how their bodies change through puberty. And they have a right to go through that and question without these types of permanent harms being made to change their bodies when they can't actually consent. I mean, we are talking about minor children here.
Right.
So this isn't even in the lens or the realm of, okay, if you're an adult and you want to make a really stupid decision, is that against what a doctor's oath is to first do no harm. We should still have those conversations, absolutely. But when it comes to minors, they can't even consent.
No,
and they have a right against this type of thing. I mean, if, you know, I remember when I was babysitting as a high school student, I was babysitting a three-year-old, and because I was painting my nails, he wanted to paint his nails too.
Right.
And it was just because I was the babysitter and I was doing that. Now, in today's day and age, his parents probably would have said, oh, this means that you think you're a girl because you want to paint your nails. And, you know, if he thought that he was a pirate, would they have chopped off his leg and put on a peg leg? I mean, this is how absurd this kind of thing is.
Right. It just, you know, and if you want to know why kids can't consent to that, look up the definition of statutory rape. if a child wants to have sex with an adult, they haven't got the legal authority to say yes, because they haven't the maturity to form consent yet. That's why it's called statutory. And so it's no different with this. Anyway, we have a caller who wants to chime in. Rick, you're on with Jenna Ellis of the American Family Association. Your comment or question, please.
So what is the ultimate goal of the left in promoting this? And years ago, let me preface it by this. I remember years ago seeing research, not that long ago, but years ago seeing research that the percentage of people that had gender dysphoria was 0.003. So if you had 1,000 people, there was somebody that had gender dysphoria. And now they've done surveys where, you know, they surveyed the school and they say years ago homosexuality was about 5%, 2 to 5%, depending. And so now it's 20, they go to high school, they do a survey, it's 25, 30% say that they have some type of
same-sex attraction. Same-sex attraction.
Yeah, inclination to this. What is the goal to push this when it's such a small, scientifically, in the past, percentage of people that are affected by this, I don't want to say mental illness, but I'm going to say mental illness.
Well, it is a mental illness, and I think that the ultimate goal is several fold. One, you get big pharma that is creating an entire class of patients that are going to rely on medication, on surgeries, on healthcare for life that would otherwise not need that. So this is all about dollars. But in terms of ideology, this is part of cultural Marxism as well, where you have the oppressor versus the oppressed and all of these people who want to buy into the LGBTQ agenda. If you identify as queer somehow, then automatically you are in a discriminated against class. And so they are pushing this whole idea of the oppressor versus the oppressed, which is antithetical to the American dream. It also sets up a class of so-called experts that it's not for the parents to look and say, oh, well, our child, we get to determine the best interests of the child. We have to then, as parents, defer to the experts, defer to the doctors and the psychologists and the therapists to know what's in the best interest of children. And where we're going with that is that ultimately then we won't be able to exercise our individual rights and freedoms even as adults. We will have a class of experts that are cultural Marxists set up by the left to tell us when, where, and how we can exercise our rights.
It's also a classic Karpman triangle with a persecutor, a victim, and a rescuer. And the experts get to be the rescuer, and they switch roles and become the persecutor. And it look up Karpman triangle in psychology, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's a classic version of that, and it's the monetization of the Karpman triangle, of the monetization of the victim is what the problem is. Rick, did that answer your question?
It did.
All right.
And then you see it pushed all the time. I remember being in a Pima County library and seeing a flyer for having a transgender, what is it, a drag queen story hour? Instead of fireman story hour, paramedic story hour, police officer coming in. So it's something that the government, the leftists in the government, are pushing forward, and they're pushing on kids every single day.
To empower the exact same structure that Jenna was just talking about. Okay, Rick, you have a great day. And that opens the line for you in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios, 520-790-2040. We got into the next thing I wanted to get into, which is cui bono. Who benefits from these practices? And it's kind of a win-win-win, lose-lose proposition. The kids lose, the parents lose control, and then big pharma, big medicine, and who else wins?
Well, everyone except rationality and common sense and truth, right? I mean, anybody who you don't have to be a conservative even or a Christian to understand that genital mutilation surgery on minors is evil and it's morally wrong.
I know.
And so this is yet.
Excuse me. I know a person who is a transgender, okay, who went through. I'll call her she. This person is a full transgender. She's conservative. She doesn't believe in it, doing it to children. And she carries a gun. She's a gun-toting, a California permit gun-carrying transgender person. Not even all people who are transgender believe in this stuff.
Right. And certainly not everyone who even believes in homosexuality and that lifestyle. So, and so you have a really interesting clash here between, you know, the feminists who are against men in women's sports, and then you also have the LGB against the TQI and all of those things that that you're setting up this ideological war. But this is where we have to argue these things based on common sense. And I thought that the Solicitor General for the state of Tennessee that argued at the Supreme Court on Wednesday did a very good job of simply pointing that out and showing mm-hmm. the harm and showing the rational basis that Tennessee's law is built upon. It's not sex discrimination. It's all about simply protecting minors from life-altering decisions for themselves when they cannot consent.
What kind of questions did the justices ask the litigants?
Well, you know, I thought that Justice Alito and Justice Thomas to an extent as well, but Justice Alito had the absolute perfect question for the Biden Solicitor General when he asked the question, is transgenderism an immutable characteristic? Because if the advocate answered to that, yes, it's immutable, then how are you trans? It completely destroys their ideology. But if you answer, no, it's not, then you've taken trans out of this binary of sex discrimination, which was the basis of their legal argument grounded in the Equal Protection Clause. So it was the perfect question to completely destroy their argument, and there was no good response to that.
Oh, that's fascinating. In closing, Jenna, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take the break, and you've only agreed to be on with us for half an hour. So is there anything else you want this audience to know about either the American Family Association or about the case?
Yeah, I think so. Just be praying for the outcome of this case and that the justices would see clearly and rule based on common sense. This is going to have a huge impact on the entire country. And we really appreciate all of the support from everyone around the country for the American Family Association. You can find all of our work at AFR.net. That's our radio side of the broadcast ministry. I host Jenna Ellis in the morning from 8 to 9 Eastern. And you can find all of our radio stations at AFR.net. And also AFA Action is our action arm where we engage in policy that is focused simply on truth and ensuring that we continue to build a moral and upright society in our civil society.
A moral and upright society. I used to remember what that was.
Don't we wish we had one still? But we've got to continue pushing for one.
Yeah. You know, I think that Acton had it right. That's all that's necessary for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing.
Yeah, so true. And if we think that the only obligation that we have as Christians or conservatives is at the ballot box once every 2 or 4 years, then we are conceding and abdicating our moral responsibility for civil society to everyone else who would love to simply take up the mantle and to make civil society into their cultural Marxist utopia. So we have to engage. It's not just an intersection in politics and culture. It's about living out our Christian worldview in society every day. And everyone can make a difference in your local town and your state as well.
Can I nicely suggest to you that you're being rather culturally blind if you think it's only Christians?
Well, it's not just Christians, but I think there's a moral obligation specifically for Christians who understand that we have a duty. And like I said, you don't have to be a Christian to understand the measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil. But I'm calling specifically Christians because there are too many that are sitting on the sidelines. And if you're not a Christian, you may not think that you have a moral obligation or a duty because you don't believe in the truth of the Word of God. But as Christians, you absolutely have a duty.
I absolutely believe I have a duty, and I'm not a Christian.
And that's great. And I would agree with you that you do have a duty.
Right.
But as Christians, because we believe in biblical truth, then we understand that our duty comes from God and He has given us the blessings of liberty. And so you're right. Every person does have that duty because we're human beings made in His image. But because Christians acknowledge the truth, then we take that even more seriously. And the only reason that we have the blessings of liberty today is because our founders recognize that God, our creator, is the one who bestowed us our rights, and they look to Him as the supreme judge of the universe. That's the wording of the Declaration of Independence, and we were founded as a Christian nation. We have to return to that. Mm. Otherwise, we get separate and apart from, if we don't have the biblical worldview, then we will descend into chaos. It is not a social contract. It can't, you cannot have morality separate and apart from God.
We were founded as a nation based on Judeo-Christian principles, but not as a Christian nation.
I wrote an entire book on that, and I would welcome you to read it. It's called The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, and I go through all of our founding documents and present an argument that shows how we were founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview, but
that's
how
what
our
I
Constitution
said. That's what I said.
Cannot be interpreted.
Slow down, interpreted Jenna. Jenna, slow down. That's what I said, that we were founded on Judeo-Christian principles, but not necessarily,
and I agree with you on that.
But not necessarily as a Christian nation. We were largely.
That's where we disagree.
Okay. Well, I would love to read your book and have a whole discussion about that. But there's about 12% of the United States, which is, I think is about 12%. No, it's probably a much smaller percentage than that. It's probably about 3% of the U.S. who are very much Bible believers that aren't Christian. They're called Jews.
Well, and that raises a whole other specter of a moral question, and unfortunately, the position that Christians take on that is that, you know, Jews very much believe in the God of the Bible. They believe in the Ten Commandments, just like my good friend Dennis Prager, but they don't recognize Jesus Christ as their Messiah, and because of that, the entire and so based on that, they don't have a full comprehensive biblical worldview. Now, the Judeo-Christian worldview, of course, is founded on the God of the Bible, and we have a lot in common with Jews who are not Messianic Jews. But we
Messianic Jews aren't Jews.
Have...
Jenna, Messianic Jews aren't Jews. They're believers in Jesus.
Well, I think that depends on what your what you understand as the heritage.
No, it depends on what you believe. It doesn't depend on that at all. Listen,
well, again, I'd welcome you to read my book, but
I'll read it and I'll book you back on. I would love to have that discussion on the radio, and I will listen to you. All right, you have a great day.
Thanks, Charles.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and.
Welcome back to the last segment of, well, last half hour of America Armed and Free. I want to point something out about this program, both Liberty Watch and America Armed and Free. The idea here is that we engage in controversy to try and resolve conflict without having to resort to a means of force. And that is part of the purpose of this program in comporting with its license to broadcast, with the station's license to broadcast in the public interest. The idea here is to air viewpoints that aren't necessarily all on one side of the aisle or the other, and air them out to where the public, where we trust the intellect of the public to decide which argument is better or what side of the aisle they're on, or something. So you see the guest I had on last week, who basically made a blood libel against Israel, which said things that weren't true, which I attempted to refute. And, you know, people who don't always take into consideration all sides of a point of view, like the guest I just had on, is more than welcome to be here on this program. Nobody has to agree with anyone. Controversy is the bread and butter of talk radio. And it makes, I think, more interesting the debate. And in any case, if you guys got to have people you'd like to see interviewed on this program, I'm happy to entertain thoughts of who might make a good guest, or email them to me, charles@libertywatchradio.com. You know, when I look at controversy and things bug me, sometimes I'll look for a physical icon to hold in my hand and contemplate. And one of the things I have
caller Caroline last week pointed out to me that this coin that I have is a silver eagle with the lady from the Walking Liberty gold coin on the front and the American eagle on the back. And this comes from Tucson Coin and Autograph. And it's an ounce of darn near pure silver. I don't know the exact percentage, and frankly, I don't care. But you can get things like this at Tucson Coin and Autograph at the corner of Oracle and Orange Grove, 6350 North Oracle, TucsonCoinandAutograph.com, or 219-4427. That's 219-4427. And I missed doing that earlier. I want to make sure and get it in. One of the excellent sponsors on this program. And again, when you patronize the sponsors of this program, no matter who it is amongst all of them, make sure you let them know that you heard it here, because that's what keeps us on the air. All right. I want to go to something else. Professor John Lott, in conjunction with Real Clear Investigations, did a study on the estimated victimization cost of crime by illegal aliens. And it's at least, in the United States per year, $166.5 billion. And this is research you can look up on through Real Clear Investigations. And it's been published in a whole bunch of places: Daily Caller, Daily Signal, Independent Journal Review, Epoch Times, Political Insider, Gateway Pundit, Association of Mature American Citizens. There's been a number of places, the Black Chronicle, the Herald Review from Sierra Vista, Arizona. There's been a bunch of places that have been that have published this, and I'm going to read an excerpt from it. You're welcome to call in and comment at 520-790-2040. In June, Victor Martinez Hernandez was charged with the murder of Rachel Morin, a mother of five in Maryland. Police in Oklahoma tracked the accused repeat offender down with a sample of his DNA recovered from the Los Angeles home invasion in which a nine-year-old girl and her mother were assaulted. Police say he came into the U.S. illegally to escape prosecution for at least one other murder in his native El Salvador in December of 2022. Quote, "That should never have been allowed to happen," unquote, said Sheriff Jeffrey Galler, referring to the numerous missed flags the case presented. His office apprehended Hernandez in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Member of the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua, sentenced to life in prison last week for the murder of Lake and Riley in Georgia. Why life in prison when you intentionally, with malice aforethought, murder someone? That assault took over 10 minutes. That is a prime candidate for the death penalty. Why, in Georgia, of all places, would there not be the death penalty for that? All right. Hernandez's case is shining a light on the federal government's failure to properly vet and track, keep track of lawless immigrants. These gaps have led to broad claims that illegal immigrants have less involvement with the criminal justice system than native-born Americans. A review of the available data, however, shows that the criminal records of millions of migrants, the ones President-elect Trump vows to prioritize for deportation, remain unknown due to the illegal crossings, lax enforcement, and data collection by federal and sanctuary jurisdictions. I think that's really important, you know. The jurisdictions are independent. They can do fairly well what they want, but they cannot be free to interfere with federal apprehensions. And if you interfere with a federal apprehension and you have the means to assist and you don't do it, are you not therefore complicit in the crime? And even if you're not, are you entitled to any taxpayer money if you're not complying with federal law? I mean, wherever you are in this debate, wherever your opinion may lie on the debate about illegal immigration, can we agree that if you don't follow federal law, you shouldn't get federal money? Is that difficult, a leap in logic? Back to the article. Let's see.
The federal government, these gaps have led to broad claims that illegal immigrants have less involvement with the criminal justice system than native-born Americans. A review of the available data, however, shows that the criminal records of millions of migrants, the ones, as I mentioned earlier, President-elect Trump wants to prioritize for deportation, remain unknown due to illegal crossings, lax enforcement, and data collection by federal sanctuary jurisdictions. In addition, an analysis of the available statistics by Real Clear Investigations suggests that the crime rate of non-citizens is vastly understated. A separate RCI analysis based on estimates developed by the U.S. Department of Justice's National Institute of Justice, NIJ. NIJ, by the way, they're the ones who certify a lot of things in law enforcement, like ballistic vests are certified by NIJ. It's a very credible national institution. Okay. Suggests that crime by illegal aliens who entered the U.S. by July 21, 2024 cost the country some $166.5 billion. These criminals disproportionately entered the U.S. during the current administration. The problem begins with incomplete initial vetting by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. The criminal histories of migrants from far-flung countries with often shoddy record-keeping are somewhat hard to determine. Somewhat? There's an understatement. It's also impractical to hold each person until they have passed a rigorous background check. As a result, ICE routinely releases many illegals into the country on their own recognizance and then discovers afterward that many had criminal records in their home countries. This is why, by the way, parenthetically, that the Remain in Mexico idea that President Trump had established during his administration was so important. Those people weren't, for the most part, actually entering the United States. They had to await all their procedures in another country, and so they weren't here to do disruptive things, if that's what they were here to do. Back to the article. In response to a request from Republican Representative Tony Gonzalez of Texas, ICE reported this summer that it has released 7.4 million such non-detained non-citizens into the U.S. during the last four decades or so. Let that sink in. There are 7.4 million people that ICE, during the last four decades, this is not just in the last 4 years, it have allowed into the United States who are not adjudicated but not legally entitled to be here. ICE reports that these include 662,566 non-citizens with criminal histories, 435,719 individuals with criminal convictions in their home countries, and another 226,847 with pending criminal charges. These precise figures, however, do not say whether the U.S. crimes of the latter group were committed in the accused's home country or inside the United States. Let's see. It's time for a break. Let's take the last break, and we'll do that now. And we'll be back with the latter part of this article in a little bit.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
This is Caroline.
Happy chickens.
We have a 5-acre horse property for sale.
They're participating in the program.
Please make that part of the package.
A ranch with chickens. They might call that the chicken ranch.
I've been called worse.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch. Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl! Stop, stop!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, jpfo.org.
We'll hike up a trail and ride down the stream. Stand by Old Faithful and watch her blow off steam. When we pack big, big lunches, that's not all we'll bring.
Okay, welcome back to the last segment of America Armed and Free, dealing with an article right now from Real Clear Investigations. It was written by John Lott, reference to the Chargers making friends with Ab. I'm glad to see that. And in article in Real Clear Investigations written by John Lott that was about the cost of criminal illegal aliens. Back to the article. In response to a request from Republican Tony Gonzalez of Texas, ICE reported this summer it's released 7.4 million such non-detained citizens into the U.S. during the last four decades or so. ICE reports that these include, as I mentioned before, 662,566 non-citizens with criminal histories. In the July 21 letter to Representative Gonzalez, ICE reported that 13,099 of these non-detained individuals have convictions for homicide. That's almost 13,100 people convicted of homicide that ICE let into the country, right? With 1,845 facing criminal homicide charges. Oh, let's try that on for size. Let's see. Facing criminal homicide charges, another 9,461 have convictions for sex offenses, not including assault or commercialized sex, and 2,659 facing pending charges. These convictions include other crimes such as assault, 62,231 of them, robbery, 10,031, and sexual assault, 15,811, with weapons offenses being 13,423, and dangerous drug offenses, 56,533. That's of the illegal aliens known to be in this country. Folks, whether you think that there's any redeeming factor to it, that is a mistake by our government. It is a mistaken policy by our government to allow people with those convictions into the United States. They should be deported, and deported as soon as possible, as soon as it can be humanely done. These figures are only suggestive of the extent of, back to the article, these figures are only suggestive of the extent of crime because they only list the most serious crimes committed by each individual. A murderer, for example, let's go to the phones. And America Armed and Free, your first name, please.
Rick.
Hi, Rick. You're on the radio.
Immigration law clearly states that if you are inadmissible at entry, you're deportable anytime thereafter if you enter the country. So if they let these people in and they've been convicted of a crime in another country, they're inadmissible, because there's also a section of immigration law that refers to crimes of moral turpitude.
Right.
If I can mispronounce that correctly. And what that means is that you can't come as on a non-immigrant visa or an immigrant visa, and you can be refused to be allowed in the country if you have a crime. And it could be even something like shoplifting. And this is similar, I think, in Australia earlier this year, Snoop Dogg was denied entry in Australia because he had something, maybe he had a conviction of marijuana use or something like this. Mm-hmm. But countries have a right to deny entry to people based on certain criteria.
Let me disagree with you. They don't have a right, they have an authority. Only people have rights. They have an authority.
They have the authority.
They have the authority to do that.
Right. And so these people never should have been let in the country. And it's a miscarriage of justice, or if you want to say if they're trying to burn down the system or burn down the country, they've got a good start on it with this.
Right.
Because
well,
tracking these people down. I'm sorry?
It's a Cloward-Piven strategy.
Cloward-Piven, that's exactly right.
To destroy the system, to destroy the system by overloading it.
Right. Charles, there's about 750. So a couple of years ago, 2022, there was about 650 immigration judges in the U.S. So there's maybe about 750 now. There's probably about 50 supervisory immigration judges that probably just review cases and review decisions. So if you have 700 or even 800 immigration judges, their average load in the past has been just under 1,000 cases. So they might have 950 cases, 935 cases. How, if you have less than 1,000 immigration judges in the entire United States, can you hear the cases of 10 million people that have been let in the country, and 10 million people that are already here illegally, and 100,000 people entering and overstaying visas every year or every 6 months.
What you could do is immediately remove those people who are not entitled to a hearing but already have an adjudication that they have to leave but haven't left. You don't need to have a hearing for those people.
Right.
You can deport them.
It's called a final order of deportation.
Right, final order. Exactly. Thank you.
Right.
And there are probably more than 500,000 of those.
Easily.
Well,
and here's the deal. You can say the country, Venezuela, says we're not going to take them back. Guess what, Venezuela? Tariff city. And we just deny issuing visas to Venezuelans. So here's what we do. Venezuela, Maduro says, nope, we're not taking this guy back. El Salvador says we're not taking this guy back, although that's not the case with the current president, I believe. So if a country says we're not taking these people back, you say, okay, our consulate and our embassy is not issuing a single tourist visa or a single non-immigrant visa or an immigration visa for, you know, if you're for a family member. Nobody gets a visa. If that's how you're going to play ball, that's what we're going to do. And I guarantee you those countries will buckle under the pressure. Guarantee.
Well, I'll tell you another thing you could do. You take anybody that is attempting to send money back to Venezuela and you cut it off.
Correct.
If the destination of the money is Venezuela or is whatever country is in question, you simply cut off the ability of people to send money there. And you know what? They'll knuckle under fairly quickly because a significant portion of their economy is probably provided by people sending back money from the U.S. Rick, I have to let you go.
We're at the theme music.
It's time for you to hang up on yourself.
I'm hanging up. Bye.
And we're about to hit the theme music any second here. So how did I know? I want to encourage you to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In liberty, love them all. Just love them at a distance. When they belong somewhere else, love them in that country. Be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Let grace and truth lead us on to victory. Let grace and truth lead us on to victory. To victory. Victory.
AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.